I'm here with Evan. He's the producer of this radio show, and he's an author of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. He's one of the driving forces behind Absurd Publications, which is a new press here in the city of Davis. Along with Corey LaRue, he has put out an anthology of writings that most of which were born right here in the city of Davis or on campus. It was called All the Vegetarians in Texas Have Been Shot. You can find out more about that book by Googling it, by visiting absurdword.com, or by heading over to the Avid Reader. Are there any copies left at the Avid Reader, Evan?
We've actually sold out. I just was told the other day. We're still awaiting the check, but we are sold out there. So soon, they will be back soon.
They'll be back soon. Excellent. So, and is that the entire first run of this anthology, or do you all have some at home?
Yeah, we printed 50 copies, and we have, I believe, 9 left. So that will, I would assume, ultimately go to Avid at some point.
Excellent. So time to order another 50.
That's very true. Very true.
Excellent. Evan, you've prepared something to share with readers and listeners today. And you've also prepared some music. We've been listening to Philip Glass this afternoon, a composer who you picked out for today's show. Why Philip Glass, and why is his work important to you?
I actually was first exposed to Philip Glass with the 2003 movie, I think, The Hours. And his score to that struck me even when I saw it. And I was sort of a little young when I saw it to really understand the movie. But in the years since, I've watched it many a time and I've listened to the soundtrack even more times. And at the same time that I saw the movie, I was also taking piano lessons, and I was a terrible student because she would say, "Here, take this, Mary Had a Little Lamb, and go practice it." And I would say, "All right, I'll do that." And then I would come back the next week, and it would be obvious that I had not even so much as opened the book. So I didn't really care about the music, to be quite honest. And so then I found the Philip Glass soundtrack to The Hours, and I took it to her, and I said, "I know this isn't Mary Had a Little Lamb, but will you teach this to me?" And she said, "This is the kind of music you get high and listen to, but all right." And from that sprung a now long history of admiration for Philip Glass, and his influence has been profound on the music that I write myself and so forth, all that kind of stuff. So,
excellent. I didn't know you were also a composer. I forgot to include that in your biography.
Maybe we can swap that out for poet, since I don't think I've earned that title in at least a year.
I think I said that you write poetry. I didn't know if I called you a poet.
Oh, okay. All right.
But there we go. Great. Now, you're going to present a piece this afternoon that resonates with a topic, a theme that you've explored in the past, and that is the joy and challenges of animal ownership.
Yeah, it didn't start off that way, but we're having the third issue of The Oddity coming out, which is a small creative journal that Corey and I are doing now, sort of as a monthly installment of what is essentially a mini anthology. And we're coming out with a third one, and he said it was going to be on prose. The last one was on poetry, and he asked that I write something for it. And so I went through, I sort of keep a casual journal, and I went through and I found something that kind of resonated with me, and I kept working with it, and I'm still working with it. And this is the topic that arises often with me, it seems like.
Excellent.
And it's nonfiction to an extent, I suppose.
It's nonfiction, creative nonfiction, here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. The author is Evan White. I'm going to cue up some Philip Glass music, if you don't mind.
Please do.
And we'll ask you to start reading. Ladies and gentlemen, Evan White.
This is a story entitled Ashes. We sat outside at the alehouse and tied the dog to the iron railing encircling the patio. "What a sweetie and fat," passersby said. What started as coincidence became the rule of the evening. The fatter people were, the quicker they called attention to the dog. Gina didn't mind and wagged her tail happily as though accepting praise. The largest woman of the evening waddled up after about half an hour, wearing a tight sequin dress the exact color of green toothpaste. She looked to Gina. "Are you a fatty fatty?" she said, Who needs to go on a diet? I considered answering her. Afterward, I would excuse my mistake by explaining that A, I thought she'd meant herself, and that B, I thought she'd been asking for my opinion. Female, right? She asked. Yeah, she is. I know a B-I-T-C-H when I see one. You and me both, I said. A little later, while admiring Gina, a woman and her husband mentioned their own dog, a dachshund. She's a mini, the woman said, and loves watching us get frisky. She hops on the bed and tries to get in between her mommy and daddy. The husband looked uneasy. Hoping for more, I laughed supportively. When she said nothing, I explained that my own dachshund, Jasper, spent his formative years attacking children. This caused trouble with animal control, and by the time he'd learned to bite above the tops of shoes, he had a legitimate criminal record. Relegated to his kennel during company, he spent hours on end snarling through the bars. By year 17, his eyes had failed, his hearing seemed to come in bursts, and all but six of his teeth had rotted away. Like a missile without a guidance system, his attacks became indiscriminate and left indentations of his gums on my mother and me as often as on the calves of strangers. As decrepitude claimed him, Jasper stopped using the doggy door to let himself out. Returning home from a movie or a meal out inevitably meant needing to soak up puddles of urine with paper towels and cautiously check the darker carpets for nuggets of soft feces. More troublesome still was his helplessness once outside. Day and night, identical in his blindness, he would wander back and forth, searching in vain for the way back inside until one of us realized he was gone. This lasted until the night he located the door himself and went out. He ambled casually to the side yard where he peed on an expensive solar lamp. Then, on his way back, he made a wrong turn and fell into the pool. Cold, panicked, and alone after a lifetime spent averse to water, he drowned. His small body floated serenely in the shallows of the pool for my mother to find only moments later, still wearing his little knitted sweater. The woman and her husband stared at me blankly. After a moment, she spoke. "It's always hard," she said, haltingly. "We lost our cat of 15 years just the other month." Russell the cat had gone downhill rapidly, she said, and his ashes were spread across Napa County by, quote, a company with a plane. "It's the most beautiful place in California," she said. "He would have wanted it." The husband nodded in grave agreement. Years earlier, the woman said, when Russell was still young and imbued with good health, he'd clawed at the cover of American Vineyard magazine. "And I remembered it, and when the time came," she said, "I knew where we had to drop his ashes. I know plenty of people who cremate pets. I've known people who bury pets sealed inside Ziploc baggies to preserve the animal and the option of seeing them again later. And though as a child I dug up a tortoise, hoping to display it on my plastic desk, I no longer see the benefit of denying a body the chance to return to the soil. The migration of flesh and tissue back into the earth lends death purpose, purpose that helps to abate pain and mournful longing. This way the body can pass into nutrients and return to life up through the roots and stems and trunks and branches of plants." Russell's story was different. A golden sun rises behind the veil of translucent grape leaves. The damp morning air is cool and silky, and the sky seems closer to the earth. The trill and buzz of insects floats around oak trees, and the power lines are beaded by resting songbirds. A light mist, dark and gray, floats down onto the vines. Months pass. The grapes are plucked and mashed into liquid. Later still, a tasting. The winery's newest, their finest yet, they say. Beneath the towering oaks and the gentle warmth of a mild day, someone asks what, specifically, is that flavor. They've had oaky wines, wines with character, even wines that, like people, are fat. But this, the deep red liquid swirling lazily in their glass, well, this is different. And what is that aroma? Given the nature of cats, the right words will be difficult. The connoisseurs along the wooden table are still and silent. "It tastes like," someone starts, unsure of himself, "like indignation." And, though he can't be sure, he says, though such a thing might be impossible, might be ridiculous to conceive, the aroma reminds him almost eerily of superior airs. The table murmurs. And then they raise their crystal glasses in a toast and wait, quiet as the grave, for the cheese.
That was Evan White with a story called Ashes, presented here on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.